Well, you don't have to call in anymore. Those of you who've been calling in and saying, where's the Live with the Jazz Cat show? I guess we are about 15 minutes late today, but it's going to be worth it. Sometimes good things are worth waiting for, and this being the case today. So without further ado, let me bring on the Jazz Cat himself, Leroy Downs. Leroy?
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
All right, take it away.
Good. Well, yes, good things are definitely worth waiting for. And today we have the wife of a legendary bass player, Sue Mingus. Hey, Sue.
Hey, Leroy.
How are you?
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
The day's not over.
Well, it's going to be fine by the time it is, though. You know, you're the torch for the legacy of Mingus music. You continue to travel the world so that, you know, through the Mingus Big Band, you know, the sound will carry on into the future. What's happening with the Mingus Big Band?
We started a new residency here in New York City this past week. If any of you come out this way, there's a club called the Jazz Standard. And we just started something called Mingus Mondays. And we have all three bands alternating. We started off last week playing all week long with a couple of days for each band. One of the bands was just out in L.A. last week, the Mingus Big Band.
You have variations of that band. So there's the Mingus Big Band, the Mingus Dynasty, and there's another Mingus band?
There's a band called the Mingus Orchestra that has instruments that are a little more exotic for jazz, like bassoon and French horn, bass clarinet, instruments that you don't associate necessarily with jazz, but Mingus loved. And it's got a more orchestral sound. We've focused a bit more on composition.
Oh, man, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful band.
Okay, well, let's talk about Charles. Think back to when you first saw him play. What compelled you to know more about the man?
Well, I'm trying to remember. I first heard Mingus at the Five Spot the week before Eric Dolphy died, back in the mid-60s. Jazz was in its heyday. Thelonious Monk had just been on the cover of Time magazine. And it was soaring. The jazz clubs were packed. And those were the days when jazz went on until 4 in the morning. Musicians complain sometimes on weekends when there are three sets, but the night used to end at 4, and then you'd go to other places and hang out at after-hours clubs until sunrise. In fact, Tonight at Noon, which is the name of my book, I stole the title from Charles, meant that a musician's midnight was noon for the rest of us, because a musician often didn't get home until 10 or 11 in the morning.
Yeah.
So it was their noon, it was their midnight.
All right, well, speaking of Tonight at Noon, if Tonight at Noon and Beneath the Underdog were double features, what would the movies be like? Who would play Charles in each, and who would play you? And who would be some of the prominent characters in the movie?
Who knows? Originally, we were thinking of, I can't even remember his name now. He's gotten older. At one point, we were thinking of Denzel Washington. I mean, there are probably many, many actors out there that could play. Charles Wright was somebody we thought of. I don't know. But it would be a natural sequence because Charles's biography ended when he was in his 30s, I think, or early 40s, and mine really focuses on the last 15 years, and particularly on the year that he was dying in Mexico, and we hung out with the witches.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty extraordinary experience watching Charles. I had wanted to call it Portrait of the Artist as a Dying Man. And so that would really cover the waterfront if we had both books back to back.
Yeah, you actually gave me Tonight at Noon at a Royce Hall performance, and I read it in 3 days, and so I know exactly what you're talking about. You're listening to Live with the Jazz Cat on 1410 AM KRML, Jazz and Blues Radio. My guest today, Miss Sue Mingus. and that's on For Locals Only show with Mr. Gary Hamada. Well, you know, they say that there's great sensitivity in power and great power in sensitivity. How would this apply to Charles?
Well, he covered all. He was a powerful voice. He was tender. He was angry. He was very spiritual. And every single emotion that he felt, he expressed in his music. He always said he was trying to play who he was, and he said the problem was that he was changing all the time. But all those changes and all everything that he felt, good and bad, came out in the music. And he was also very spiritual. He would go to the piano late at night and sit down and say the music was waiting for him on the keys. And he always said that he took credit for his virtuosity on the bass because he worked 8 hours, for example, on one finger to make his fourth finger, which is your weakest, his strongest. But he said the melody came from God.
Lovely. Well, I was just going to ask you, you know, what are some of the ways that Charles composed? I mean, what justices inspired him?
Well, he composed at the piano, and of course he had music in his head. I think he was composing in his head all the time. I used to think when he was paralyzed and couldn't either play at the piano or sing songs into a tape recorder, which is the way he recorded the last music that he wrote, and that actually Joni Mitchell wrote lyrics for a number of the pieces that he sang into a tape recorder. But he always had music running through his... I like to think he had the great pleasure of all that music in his head, even when he couldn't move or write.
I'm sure he did.
And he spent most of the hours of the day when he was at home at the piano. It was where he found his peace and his center, the center of his being, and where the world was quiet and supportive. I'm looking at his piano right now as I sit here. In our apartment in New York, and it's one of the things I most missed was hearing Charles compose at the piano.
Yeah, well, you were looking at his piano, and when your guys in the Mingus Band go on tour, one of them is always playing Charles's bass, is that right?
Yeah, well, Boris Kozlov, our Russian bass player, has been playing Charles's Lion's Head bass for many years now. And he brings it on tour.
Yeah. A little bit of Mingus with us all the time.
Yeah.
You're listening to Sue Mingus on the show, live with the Jazz Cat, on 1410 AM KRML Jazz Blues Radio, on the For Locals Only show with Mr. Gary Hamada. Well, an entire life's work in 4,000 measures is quite a statement for an epitaph, but it almost makes perfect sense. I mean, it's almost like... apropos that Charles would compose such an extraordinary piece.
Yeah, well, we performed it in L.A. Last year at the Disney Center, and it's getting close to 3 hours. We found more pieces that belong in Epitaph, so who knows how long it will be in the end.
Oh, so it's still building.
It's still building.
Well, you know, every man experiences evolution in life and comes to understand love and music and communication and feelings a bit differently, you know, as we age. I mean, there's stories that people like to tell in such a way as to perpetrate the myth that they knew Charles or they had some experience with him. So from the closeness of love's perspective, starting from the time you met him, if you can give us an impromptu, you know, cerebral, chronological timeline of Charles and his thoughts as he progressed through his life.
That's too big a that's too big a question, Leroy.
Well, all right. Well, give us a few.
I step back from that.
All right. Well, then just think of a couple of points that you remember that were pretty special to you. I mean, you just mentioned that he played the piano there in the apartment, which was wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of stories about Charles and a lot to say, but I think the most important thing is to listen to the music, because you hear the man in his entirety in the music. You hear everything that he was, everything he thought. He was always expressing himself verbally. He, from the bandstand, he used the bandstand as a soapbox to air his political views. He wrote copiously. But aside from all of these means of communication, the great communication is in the music, and it's the pleasure and the pain and everything the man lived, you can hear. And that means more than any words.
Yeah. Well, we're all just grown-up extensions of our childhood, and sometimes things never leave us well into adulthood. What are some of those childhood things that the world doesn't know about Charles?
I don't know, Leroy. You know, I have no idea. I didn't know Charles as a child, but he did write a vivid autobiography called Beneath the Underdog, and he does talk there about a lot of his childhood experiences. So I would just encourage everyone to read what Charles wrote, and above all to listen to the music, and there you'll have the portrait, the self-portrait in not only three colors, in a zillion colors. He wrote a lot of tunes called, one was called Portrait, one was called Self-Portrait, one was called Self-Portrait in Three Colors. But all his music is a portrait.
Yeah.
So with that, I think we've covered the waterfront, but it's always great to talk to you.
Well, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much, Sue.
Okay. All right. Take care, Leroy.
Thank you very much.